evening, Rabbosai. We are finishing off Melachim Aleph Test Zayin, the last pasuk. Melachim Aleph pasuk Test Zayin. Perek Yud Zayin. Melachim Aleph Perek Test Zayin pasuk Lamed Dalid. Try saying that five times fast. Okay. Abstain. Do you want? Should we get the English one? No. Okay. We ended off last time, long time ago, beginning to describe the reign of Achav and the new lows that he was bringing Klal Yisrael to. And we finish off the perek with the following. The Yamav, in his day, Banach Chiel Beis Ha'eli, Chiel of Beis El, built Es Yericho, built up the city of Yericho. Now, we remember Yericho was the first city conquered by the Jews when they came into Eretz Yisrael. Yeshua destroyed the city and he imposed a curse. He said that anybody who rebuilds it wanted to remain destroyed in ruins as an eternal monument. He said anybody who rebuilds Yericho will begin laying its foundations with his eldest son, and he'll finish establishing its doors with his youngest, meaning all his children will die. That was a curse that Yeshua issued. So, in this time, this man named Chiel, he built Yericho. Baviram b'chayra yista. Indeed, with his oldest son Aviram, he laid the foundations of the city. Aviram died as he began. And with his youngest son Seguv, meaning at the expense of his youngest son Seguv, he put up the final doors of the city. He died as he completed the job. Kidvar Hashem asher diber b'yad Yeshua bin Nun, as Hashem spoke through Yeshua bin Nun. So, before we address Chiel himself, we'll just note, the Mefarshim say that this really reflected a new low in the deterioration of the people. Because, even though it might seem, we're already talking about Baal, the Avodah Zarah, this is worse than Avodah Zarah, and the answer is, if we're talking about severity of Averis, not. But in terms of the casting off of any last remnants of fear of Hashem, this was a step further. Why? Because Avodah Zarah was always a struggle, and people succumbed. Here was a very, very... I said Avodah Zarah was always a struggle. Certainly the most severe of Averis, certainly a lot more severe than what happened here. Right? But standards slowly deteriorate. And if you're not working actively against it, that's what happened. We're not saying that that's good. But we're saying that there was an understandable process, not a justifiable process, but an understandable process in terms of deterioration. Deterioration is the natural course of gravity. Deterioration happens unless you're working against it. So, since the Jewish people weren't working against it, the people of the 10 tribes, at least the kings, and one thing led to the next, and they found themselves sunk in Avodah Zarah. And it was always a certain draw to Avodah Zarah. There was always a certain mysterious attraction to Avodah Zarah, which you always have to struggle against. And slowly but surely, they fell really into full-fledged Avodah Zarah. But here we're not talking about a widespread thing that sometimes people will start doing privately in their home. We're talking about one very specific action, right, that nobody ever touched because of the fear of the Shvuah, of the curse of Yeshua. Right? This is always like a scary, non-touchable thing that nobody had ever done before. Right? It's not something else that someone starts a little bit, the other one does a little bit more. No, but this was just one isolated act, not connecting to anything else, that stood alone as a taboo, something scary, something untouchable that nobody dared ever transgress. The curse. Yeah.
And he only mentions building up the city of Israel. So what is the idea of coming from not only that, but any other city, new city, to neighbor?
So you're referring to some of the Mefarshim. We didn't mention that yet. But you're referring to some of the Farshim that say that actually Chiel did not build up the original city of Yericho. That there are actually inferences, earlier implications that already had been rebuilt at an earlier stage in history. Whoever did it, did it. But that he built a new city that was, that he named Yericho, that Yeshua's curse actually contained two elements to it. Not to rebuild the original, and not to build a new city and name it Yericho. I don't know how that's derived. I don't know. But yeah, like Stan is mentioning, you are a person that says. What's that?
Hashem says one thing, and then all of a sudden, rock and another tantrum.
You have to see in each instance how it's inferred. Sometimes a little word might, you know, be a nuance that indicates that. But I don't know in this case. I don't know. So this really represents him reaching a point where someone was able to come along and say, once they're ready. Enough in Avodah Zarah, like, you know, one step leads to another. It's not like you take any particular step and suddenly say, okay, now I am distancing myself 100 miles from Hashem, right? Or now I'm completely severing my ties with Torah loyalty. The way the deterioration works is it's another step and then another little step and a little bit worse and a little bit worse. When you suddenly look back now to 50 years ago, you might see, yeah, things change drastically. But not one thing to the one step to the next. But here, this was something that now, with the level that the Jewish people had reached, he already felt comfortable enough to say, you know what? Forget about all the old ideas. You go ahead and rebuild the city of Yerushalayim. So this is why this actually highlights the lowered state of the Jewish people in a way even more than the Avodah Zarah in general. But now let's study the phenomenon itself. Rabbi Moshe talk about this. This is a shocking phenomenon. This guy knows about the curse. He knows about the curse, right? He goes ahead, and he says, you don't have to worry about it. And his first son dies. I think he stopped short. He doesn't. He continues. And he's one only, he didn't only have two sons. He had a number of sons. As he's moving along, you know, it's like, you know, they make up with the mortgage. At each stage of the building, you get another, you know, you don't have to pay another sum. So that's how it was. At each stage of the project, another son went. Right? And he's continuing. Until finally, he reaches his youngest son, and he goes ahead with the concluding ceremonies. What's going on here? And the answer is, this is what Mali wants to say, a scary answer. What's going on here is human nature. That's what's going on here. Once a person reached a state of spiritual desensitization, you know, not really believing. So even when something happens, he's capable of explaining it away, of rationalizing. Especially once he already started on this project. At this point, to admit it is admitting that I was wrong. It was by chance, it was this, it was that. And yeah, the signs can be pretty blatant. Also, looking back in retrospect, and just seeing it put so starkly by the puzzle, it's as clear as could be. But no, managed to rationalize, managed to explain it away. There was an epidemic, other people in the neighborhood died, this, that, right? Like it says by Paroi. Moshe says there's going to be devil. The next day, the animals die. Paroi's busy sending, no, go check in Eretz Goshen also. I'm sure you'll find that there's an epidemic by the Jews as well. And if there wasn't, he would have said, oh, you see? What's that?
You call that stupidity?
The truth is, this is what we call it's human stupidity. But the truth is, often stupidity is synonymous with human nature. Often stupidity is synonymous with human nature. Right? So, this is what was going on here. He killed his sons because once he was already so in it, he couldn't take a step back and say, no, this is actually wrong. I shouldn't have done this. This is happening as a result of that. Especially after the first son died, by coming and saying that he'd be admitting not just that he did wrong, but that he was the cause of the first son's death. The Eitzahara is such, or Negiyas is such, a person's partiality is such, that he'll move into the risk of losing his next son, so it's not having to acknowledge and concede that I was actually responsible for the death of that first son. So now what happens? You were going to say something, or John?
I'm
going
to say that point. That what's the alternative?
Well,
you know, if he admits the truth there, then he's admitted he killed his son, that God exists, etc., right? And it's just too much.
Too much.
Would you rather have his son die than for him to completely, utterly face that reality?
So you're saying in a very blunt way. If we would cushion it a little more, we'd say he'd rather convince himself that there is no connection and that they probably won't die than face up to the fact that I caused the death of my first son. And then when the next one goes, he continues with that. Right?
Isn't that order of whatever you're going to call it, is considered to human nature, like, isn't it reverse to what the Torah says? The Torah speaks about, like, if you're going to go with me, carry it, and I'm going to have Torah, and then you're going to be buzzed with people with his Torah. And that's all this, and the last thing that you reach is eventually what is Zohar. Right? Like, you know, kind of all the rejections that were happening before. And here he's starting with, like, what is Zohar is given. And then, not with the first one. Like, he just doesn't care about the smaller minor things.
No, so you have to explain. It's not like Avodah Zarah was the first step of the deterioration.
Yeah. Right, Avodah Zarah. They've gone beyond that point already.
What's that?
They've gone already beyond that point. Avodah Zarah.
Right, but so the truth is here it's more than just a broader fear of heaven. Here it was a very, very specific, distinct thing that nobody ever touched. It was more than just a general being afraid of the terrorist punishments, right? It was a very distinct thing. The city of Yericho, if we're going with the simple understanding, not like what you quoted, but if we're going with the simple understanding, they actually rebuilt the city of Yericho. The city of Yericho is still sitting in ruins since the time of Yeshua. There's something psychologically more to that. And nobody ever dared touch it because of that curse that's hanging over it. No, it's even more than that. Ironically, the Gemara points out that sometimes people are... Sometimes people can be more afraid of a segula than an aveira. Right? This is kind of what's going on here also in a sense. We're not saying that it really makes sense. But the Gemara talks about people who, they might be willing to... not Shomer Shabbos, but a mezuzah. Yeah, or you have people who cheat and steal, etc. But they never put a child on a table. Right? Because somebody once said that putting on a table, you don't put children on the table, it's not good for the child. I don't know exactly who or what, but, right? You'll see the phenomenon. It's a common phenomenon. There's some sort of esoteric, something you'll be very, very, very mocked on. But much more basic things, not. So, that is what's going on. The Gemara talks about people who are very, very mocked on not letting their food become tummy, but they would even kill. Right? They kill. But they wouldn't let their food become tummy. But knowing your food become tummy is not even also, right? It's a certain hidur that some people have. Yeah. And that really, in a sense, that's what was going on here also. I mean, the Zohar Mela. But no one's going to touch the curse of Yeshua.
How much time left between the destruction of the Yericho and Joshua's curse?
That Yeshua's?
And Yeshua's curse.
That was pretty much on the spot. When they destroyed Yericho, Yeshua conquered Yericho on the spot. He said, no, it should never be built again.
Let me ask a question. Earlier we talked about that there's two different points in the first one was rebuilding the city itself, and the other was building a new city with that name.
Yeah.
What was that?
So this is what Rav Stein referenced. Different proportions say different things, but Rashi, I think in the Gemara, says that he did the second one. He built a new city
with the name.
And the name of Reza, yeah.
Okay, and since after that, he did that. Did the first curse still apply?
No, so this understanding is based on inferences that the old city of Yericho had been built a long time ago. Someone had done it. I don't know who, where, what. Like you see, even in the time of David, it appears that Yericho was a settled city at that time.
Okay, now it's...
So that had already been done.
The same site had already been done in the times of Tanakh at an earlier point than this story.
Apparently, yeah.
Apparently, it's not explicitly written, but we infer it.
Yeah.
And this might say is the second half of that curse with the story.
Yeah. Okay, so what happens? So Chiel is sitting Shiva. Poor guy, right? He's sitting Shiva. His wife's not talking to him. And he's sitting Shiva. So now, he gets two distinguished Shiva callers who, if anybody could have been arranging it better, would have made sure that they don't come at the same time. Who comes to his house for the Shiva? Eliyahu HaNavi comes in one door, and Achav, the king of Israel, comes in the other door. This is what happens. Okay? So here we're being introduced to one of the most unique characters of Nach, Eliyahu HaNavi. Just a little bit of... Here he's entering on the scene. So just a little bit of... Before we move on, a word or two on Eliyahu HaNavi, just to give the background. We all know the famous medrash about Eliyahu HaNavi, but there's actually a machlokes in Chazal, where he came from, who he was. There are shittas that he came from Shevet Gad, there are shittas that he came from Shevet Binyamin. But the most famous and widely accepted shita is that he was Pinchas. That's right. He was the same Pinchas from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, which means that he was a very old man at this time. Interestingly, it's interesting to note, the Ralban, who is characterized by his very, well, allow ourselves to use the word, it's almost a dirty word for me, I don't like using this word, rationalist, but he goes with a very philosophical approach to, in his commentary, right? He analyzes the issue of Eliyahu's identity and ends up concluding, completely corroborating the understanding that he was Pinchas. And he basically says, even though, right, that puts us, it's a very unusual phenomenon we'd be acknowledging by saying that, he shows all kinds of different instances, and he says it would be very strange, any of the other explanations, and that would also challenge us with all kinds of strange things. And he says, this is strange to say that he was Pinchas, but it's the easier of, however you go with Eliyahu HaNavi, you can run into mysteries and contradictions and challenges. So he corroborates the understanding that yes, Pinchas, Eliyahu was Pinchas. And he draws a lot of very convincing parallels in the styles of the two and the things that Hashem says about the two, about Pinchas and the Torah, and about Ananas, and about Eliyahu HaNavi, the way they operated. For example, he says, it shows about how both of them were commonly swept to the scene and off the scene by winds of Hashem. Right? How it says about both of them that they had special bracha of shalom from Hashem. Both of them, the way they operated was they would disappear for long periods at a time and then suddenly appear on the scene again. Out of nowhere, they suddenly appear. Right? He draws all these parallels. And he says that yes, indeed, all indications point to the fact that Pinchas and Eliyahu are the same person.
I think we said this completely, but I heard the idea that Eliyahu Novi is the builder of Pinchas, actually Pinchas himself.
So there are those who explain it that way. Rabban is going with the understanding that he is Pinchas.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there a problem with saying he's the builder? Is it something to do with something? Or?
I don't know. It's interesting because he also notes how he says how he notes a few different incidents in Eliyahu's life. He says, yes, Eliyahu was blessed with an extremely long life, and he says he actually seems to express by Eliyahu himself. He says, Eliyahu at one point davened, Hashem, take my soul away from me because I'm not better than my father's. So what's that got to do with anything? I'm not better. Why should you die because you're not better than your father's? Because what he meant to say was, why should I never die? Why am I better than my ancestors who did die? That's what he's expressing. He's not expressing the fact that, you know, it's not better than my father, I should die now. He's expressing that I'm never dying. It's just not happening. Why am I better than everybody who came before me? And the Ramban says that his request was not accepted. He continued to live. In fact, the Ramban says the famous incident in which Eliyahu went up to Shamayim in a fiery chariot, Ramban says, even then he wasn't gone. Rabban shows how after that time, Eliyahu delivers a letter to Yoram, the king of Yehoshaphat, who was at a later time. So he says, yeah, he went up and then he came back down. And Rabban is going with the understanding that this was all very physical. He sent the letter, it means that there was a physical person who sent the letter. He went up, he came down, and he did that often. That was the way he operated. So yes, we're moving into a study of one of the most unique characters in Nach. I forgot to say at the beginning of this year that, just to make things clear, I'm aspiring to get through three psukim today. Okay. Okay. Literally.
Did one so far.
Yeah. So, Chiel is sitting Shiva. Eliyahu walks in one door, Achav walks in the other door, and they both sit down. Bad news. Eliyahu doesn't mince any words. Here we're seeing Eliyahu the Kanoi, right, the zealot at work. He doesn't mince any words. Things are put straight, blunt, and to the point. Sits down and says to Chiel, here's my consolation for you. You know why this happened? Because you transgressed the Shvuah of Yeshua. Let's make it very clear. No ifs, hows, whats, qualifications, rationalizations. This happened because you transgressed the curse of Yeshua. Now, this was a problem. Malbim says, the Malbim is the one who, this is a famous chazal, all the Mephoshim cited. The Malbim is the one who really develops it. So the Malbim says this was a problem for Achav, because this story with Chiel was making big waves. The story was really getting around, everything that happened here. And it was shaking people's lack of emuna. This was a problem. Right? People's lack of emuna was being shaken. And Achav wasn't happy about this. So this threatened him. Right? This is the promoter of Baal. So, and then Eliyahu comes in and makes this assertion very bluntly and to the point. So Achav wanted to downplay it. He said, no, it's not. So what did he say? He said to Eliyahu, oh yeah? It's because he transgressed the curse of Yeshua? Who's greater, Yeshua or Moshe? Moshe, right? He said, if so, why aren't Moshe's predictions coming true? Moshe said, if you serve other gods, there will be no rain. And look, we're serving other gods, and we're prospering, and we're doing just fine. So, don't tell us Lakshya. It's got nothing to do with anything, and it was just a tragic coincidence, and that's all. Nobody should let their emunah start coming back into play. So, here we move on. Vayem Eliyahu. Eliyahu said, aha, if so, you're wondering why is there rain? I have a solution to the problem. Vayem Eliyahu atishbi, mitoshavei Gila. So Eliyahu atishbi, from the residents of Gilad, said, El Acha, Chai Hashem Elikei Yisrael, by the life of Hashem Elikei Yisrael, Hashem Amati Lefano, who I'm close with, there will be no dew or rain in the coming years until I give the word. That'll solve your problem. Right? So, the question here is, what's going on here? Achav has a question. How does Eliyahu answer the question? Right, Eliyahu is coming to say, okay, so from now on, why didn't it happen up till now? So the Malbim says something amazing. The Malbim is what really develops. The Malbim says like this. So you know what was really the answer to Achav's question? Before Eliyahu spoke up. What was the answer to Achav's question? How come Yeshua's curse is being fulfilled and Moshe's prediction not? So the Malbim says as follows. He says Moshe, note that I kept on using the word prediction with Moshe and cursed by Yeshua. Yeshua issued a personal curse at his own discretion, Malbim says. Moshe did not. Moshe is not giving over his own messages. Moshe is conveying the word of Hashem. Moshe's curse was a clause of Torah. The Torah says, if you worship other gods, the rain will stop. It's a part of the Torah's reward and punishment system. The Torah's reward and punishment system in this world is a very big part of Hashem's Hashgacha. Right? There's a system of Hashgacha. Hashem is directly involved with the Jewish people in a way that failures are immediately followed up by punishments. There's immediate feedback. And successes are immediately crowned with rewards. And you see that in this world. And there's this live, ongoing, interactive dynamic with Hashem, which is what distinguishes the Jewish people from any of the other nations. All the other nations operate according to nature, in which even if they sin, the results are long in coming. You don't see a very direct, immediate interaction, right, between the sins and the effects. But the Jewish people, it's always like that. Their material state will always be a response to their spiritual state. That is Hashgach. That is a sign of Hashem's closeness to the Jewish people. Not only the rewards, this is very important to understand, a fundamental point. Not only the rewards, but the punishments also. Punishments also. So now, the Malbim says, this system of Hashgacha, of the immediate give and take between Hashem and the Jewish people, is in effect as long as the Jewish people are on the right level. If in a general way they're close enough with Hashem, and they're living up to their job, this Hashgacha is in place, and this, the reward and punishment immediate system is in place. The punishments also are a manifestation of that closeness. But if the people as a whole will start to think, they do a sin, punishment. But if they don't learn, and they continue to sin, and they continue to deteriorate, slowly but surely, that effect is going to be dulled, it's going to diminish. Because the Hashgacha, the whole system of Hashgacha starts to part. And they move into a natural state of affairs. And therefore, neither the rewards nor the punishments will be manifest in the way that they are when there's Hashgacha. We already saw this concept earlier, if you remember, that's what we explained. That, remember, the Navi came from Yehuda. Hashem told him not to stay in Beis El. Right? What's Beis El? The city where Yerovam was. And then a false Navi told him to stay. And he stayed. The Navi, the true Navi, was eaten by a lion. The false Navi who messed him up got no punishment. We explained the same point. The 10 tribes had already drifted so far from Hashem that they lost that special level of Hashgacha. There was no longer that system of immediate reward and punishment. And therefore, on the contrary, it was a sign of their distance. But that's right. At this point already, they could have a desire, and it won't necessarily affect the rain. It will continue according to natural processes. In Eretz Yehuda, we still have a system of failure, punishment. But not in the 10 tribes anymore. The 10 tribes are too far gone. They're already operating like a guy. So therefore, the Malbim says, that's why you did not have this effect. Idolatry did not equal no rain. There was no rain. And that's why Moshe's predictions were not coming true. If so, why did Yeshua's curse come true? So the Malbim says, Yeshua's curse was not a part of the Torah system. Yeshua's curse was something personal about Yeshua. He issued a personal curse. When a tzaddik of that level, another, such a great man, makes a statement, Hashem is going to carry it out. It's about Yeshua. This is not about the subject. It's not about the 10 tribes. This is about Yeshua. It's about Yeshua's honor. Right? That stays in effect. It could be, doesn't matter who it is. So therefore, that's right. Yeshua's curse, the Moshe's prediction, part of that system of Hashgacha that didn't exist in the 10 tribes anymore. Yeshua's curse, Hashem is still standing up in the honor of Yeshua. Someone came and transgressed Yeshua's curse, the effect was immediate. That was the answer to the question. That was the answer to Alpha's question. Now, do you think that if Eliyahu would come and explain this philosophy to Achav, Achav would say, now I understand? Of course not. We know what Achav was about. He would have come back with a sharp line, would have put it all away. Eliyahu said, you know what? I'm not going to tell you the answer. I'm going to show you the answer. I'm giving a curse that there aren't going to be any rain now for the coming years until I say so. This is really not about Moshe and the Torah. This is Eliyahu putting his word on the line. And he says, and I have the same power as Yeshua. That's why he says, Yahshua Magdilafan. Hashem that I'm close with. I also have that power. You want to know? You want to see the answer? I'm going to show you the answer. Here. I'm giving a curse now, and therefore, he also says, dew. The Torah doesn't say that there won't be rain or dew. The Torah says that there won't be rain. Eliyahu says, look, I'm going to give you my own personal curse. I'm going to outdo the Torah. Right? In this sense. Hashem said no rain. I'm saying no rain and no dew. Now you'll see. And that's what happened. That's what happened. So then, immediately afterwards, Vayehi Dvar Hashem Elav Leino. The word of Hashem came to Eliyahu saying, Leich Mizeh, now that you said that, you have to disappear immediately. Because now Achav is going to be out to dinner. Now no, there's another psychological twist to what Eliyahu did here. This is not a chaptis. We're already seeing that these people are stars of rationalization, right? It would be easy enough, right? This is a drought. Droughts happen, right? In other words, the truth is, I'm going to move on to a little bit of a different track. After we gave over what Malbin says, the Moshe David Mali says something interesting. He also says, why indeed had there been rain the whole time? He also asks the question. A number of the Mepharshim asked the question. Why indeed had there been rain until Elio spoke up? So Moshe David Mali says, on the contrary, Hashem was waiting for Elio to come and do the job. So, the Moshe David Mali is always speaking in the Kabbalistic realms, but I would like to suggest a very pragmatic, down-to-earth psychological understanding of this. Let's say there had not been rain. As it says in the Torah, if Chiel was able to write away, to explain away the uncanny death of one after the other, would it be a problem to explain away a couple of years of drought? That would be easy enough. You know what happens now? As long as it's just happening, right? But so you can explain it away. But once it comes in the form of a specific person, it's his fault, and he's the one who did it, and he's not coming and throwing it in Achav's face, challenging Achav, and like putting him on the spot in front of all his people. Now Achav is full of wrath toward Elio. He's going to be running after him, right? This already creates a reality that the sense is there that it's Elio holding back the rain, right? And Achav is now, we're going to see now, pursuing him, searching all over to try to find it. What's Achav himself doing? Achav himself is helping hammer home to the people around, this is the curse of Elio, right? This is already Achav himself making that statement through his own action. And this is already too much for him to ignore. Elio came, stuck himself in Achav's face and said, you want to forget Hashgacha? Forget Hashgacha. This is me. I'm saying there's no rain and I'm going to disappear. Go find me. Right? You want rain? Go find me. And Achav is not only does he search the country, he searches the surrounding countries. Everybody is very keenly aware of the fact that it's Elio holding back the rain. This is already something that can't be explained away. And Achav himself is going to, again, for the same reasoning that we said before of a person's own pride not letting him do what's rational, Achav would not be able to swallow what Elio threw at him and just say, no, 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 it's got nothing to do with Elio. He's fine. It's just, like, no, he's an enemy. The people have to catch him, kill him. Everybody gets the message loud and clear. So therefore, Taka, immediately, Vahidva Hashem Elav Leino. The word of Hashem came to Elio saying, Leich Mizeh. Oh, this is the first. I did more than I expected to do. Okay, this is already the fourth pasuk that we're doing tonight. Leich Mizeh. Go away from here. Then you have to disappear. You're in danger. Now, Achav and Izeva are going to be out again. Upanisa lecha keima. Go east. Then istarta benachal kris. Hide at the creek of Chris, Asher al pnei yadin. That is east of the yadin. What's that? Why could he not just go to Yehuda? Interesting question. I don't know. Off the cuff, I'd suggest two things. First of all, perhaps Achav had the borders well protected. Secondly, we're going to see a little later that in Achav's search, he searched also the surrounding countries. Achav was a very powerful king, and he had the ability to make the other kings cooperate with him. Apparently, I thought I would make it to Yoshi. So apparently, he would have been able to, it's possible he had the influence to be able to make the people he needed to cooperate also. So Hashem told him, just go hide. is still high.
Also, there were rumors.
What's that?
There were rumors in your family about this thing.
That's right, unfortunately, as we'll discuss. That's right, that's right. So go high.
Had an extradition treaty.
What's that?
They had an extradition treaty.
It's quite possible. Right? They're cooperating with each other. It's quite possible. So, Hugo disappeared. Vayomer Nachal Tishte. And you'll drink from the Nachal, from the creek. Esa'ovim Tzivisi Lechalkel Chasham. And I'll command the ravens to provide for you. Meaning, you'll have your food delivered to you by ravens. Vayelech Vayas Kidba Hashem. So he went, he did as Hashem told him. Vayelech Vayishav Benachal Kris Hashav Ne'ayadim. He went, he hid in the area of the creek of Kris that was by the Yadin. The Orvin Nivim Lechem Ubosom Babaika. The Lechem Ubosom Be'erev, he was very, he had good accommodations. He had these ravens would deliver for him bread and meat in the morning, bread and meat in the evening. Where did they get this bread and meat from?
Achav's palace.
Achav's kitchen. Achav's kitchen. Achav is going to be the one providing for Eliyahu HaNavi.
It's kosher.
What's that?
He's Mahadra.
Oh, so this is Avigdor Miller would make a big deal about this. He'll make a big deal pointing this out. You see that Eliyahu HaNavi ate the kashrus of Achav's house. Right?
Hashem told him to.
Oh, so the truth is that's really how you can rebuff the raya. The Mefarshim do say that. Eliyahu did not have to worry about the kashrus of what was being brought in, because he was told by Hashem, I'm going to send you food. Regardless, he was allowed to eat it. Right? But apparently, I would imagine that the Gemara's intent is, at the end of the day, Hashem presumably would not bring him non-kosher food. What's that? Governor's hiding in caves. Yep. So, Rabbi Avigdor would stress this in order to point out that, again, to remember that even when we talk about the idolaters of the worst kind, the 10 tribes, this does not mean that they abandoned Judaism. As paradoxical as it sounds, these were from people. With high halachic standards, who worshipped idols. Right? We say, what do you mean, from people with high halachic standards who worshipped idols? It's a contradiction in terms. I'm saying, you know, so they might have said, from a person with high halachic standards who speak Lashon Hara is also a contradiction in terms. Right? But yes, there are Yetzaharas, and the Yetzahara can achieve this. The Yetzahara can achieve this. We have no idea what the draw of a Yetzahara is. But in those days, it was a very, very terrible temptation. It was very difficult to withstand. You see other instances, we'll see as we go along, that Achav, in his own perverted way, was a very conscientious Jew. In his own very strange way. What's that? From Yitzhahara.
He made sure to have a shofar as a Yer Shamayim, like his check his knife before shaking everything.
So you know the story that David Kaplan tells. He tells about the story about there was a Rav who went out to one of these out of town places to try to, you know, do kiruv, etc. He made himself a shul there, and there was a big Reform temple in the area, and the Reform rabbi just like made his life miserable. He wanted to drive him out of town. And make his life miserable in every way possible. Okay, he's trying to put up with it. One day, he sees the former rabbi, the president of the Reform Temple, comes into his shul. The minion shachris. Says Kaddish. So the rabbi comes over to him afterwards, he says, why are you here? Have your own sex. So, you got a big, huge temple. He says, between me and you, God is Orthodox. Right? So yeah, quite bad. Achav did what he did, but he would not accept one of his own kind to be the Sheikhic. Sheikhic were only the Sheikhim from the Eda. Right?
He wasn't altogether
just a few scholars. Oh, that's right. That's right. You're right. That's right. As we'll see as we go along, Achav was not the villainous character that we picture. The truth is that a more accurate portrayal of Achav would probably be a wishy-washy man lacking some spine who was completely dominated by his wicked wife, but he himself, we're going to keep seeing him torturing himself with the back and forth. It was mamish not the wicked, diabolical man with the handlebar mustache and the deep, evil laugh that we might picture. Yezebel fit that profile. But it's true, like you're saying, Achav, we might be surprised if we were to see the profile. He was an idolater with every, from the depths of his heart. But there were a lot of surprising aspects to his character as well. We'll see. Okay.
I mean, we last time was like that he bought the gold medal for wishes.
For
wishes. Okay, nobody was more machis than him.
That's right. He was the worst ever. And yet he's better than my
picture.
Achav, it says he remained in Kappa Keller. They couldn't put him in either place.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they couldn't put him in either place. Just kind of stayed hanging. But.